Elchim Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals. Hello and welcome to Elchim Talks, an investment commentary podcast from Legal & General Investment Management. I'm Mark Chappell, investment writer. Today we're discussing some fascinating research conducted by our Elgin Real Assets team on the future of leisure property. Here to discuss it is returning guest Eleanor Dukes, property strategist, and new to the podcast, Louis Storer, senior asset manager. Thanks to you both for joining us here today in the studio.
Thanks very much.
It's great to be back. I think I need my own theme tune now.
Oh, we definitely need to get that sorted. Yeah. If someone can learn the piano very, very quickly, well, let's get that underway. So I want to start with understanding what exactly is leisure property. So Ellie, could I turn to you for this?
Thank you. So I think leisure is such a broad term. It captures a huge amount of the property market. But for us within real assets, we think of leisure as a couple of formats. So in terms of the type of properties that we invest in, out-of-town parks, so you'll see them when you drive past on the motorways or those big transport hubs. They're typically anchored by a cinema. Yep. They'll be our big anchor tenants. And then we might have two or three other units around the anchor. So it could be a selection of restaurants. It could be some of the experience-based activity operators that we see through. It might even be a gym. So there's that part of the leisure market that's out of town. And then alongside that, there's also the leisure that we see on the high street. So again, restaurants, but also things like
hotels.
Yeah. So, but for us, really, in what we're talking about today, it's that out of town leisure where you go. It's a destination.
And Louis, does the out of town leisure make up a lot of the UK property market?
It's actually quite a small part. Okay. So our the universe that we call the leisure universe is relatively small if you compare it to the retail sector, the industrial sector. I think currently it's roughly £4.5 billion worth of property, and that's minute in comparison to the likes of retail and industrial.
So you mentioned a lot of different types of property, including cinemas, restaurants. These have been around for quite a long time. What's really changing in the leisure market right now?
That's a really great question. So over the past 2 or 3 years, we've seen a real sea change in how people spend their leisure time. So by leisure time, we mean time when one isn't in work, this mythical spare time when we're not in the office. But people are really placing a great emphasis on what they do in their leisure activities. So it might be having now a sort of multi-touch point journey. Mm-hmm. So not just going to the cinema and going home, or going for a meal and going home. They'll join those together and it'll be an experience, a day out. What's driving this is a number of factors. So people have higher rates of disposable income now, and they want to move away from retail, from the buying of goods to spending it in experiences. It's the experiential macro trend that I've talking about before. Alongside that, Louis, I don't know if you've...
Yeah, so I think actually historically going to a restaurant was considered a treat, and it was something that you'd save your money up for. But with the evolution of the casual dining market, this is much more accessible to so many more people. So people are doing it on a much more regular basis and treating it more like a hobby and a part of their everyday life. So that's really driven this explosion of casual dining in the sector that we've seen over the last few years. So the cinema sector has really evolved as well. And Hollywood and Disney and all these big businesses which are supporting the film industry. There is a great pipeline of films coming out of the industry. A lot of people, if not everyone, will understand the Marvel chain, which was absolutely thriving. Everyone wants to go and see every single one of the Marvel films. So that's owned by Disney. In fact, Disney is a thing a lot of people don't quite understand actually how big an influence Disney has. And I think last year there was a point in the year when every big name film that was in the cinemas was owned by Disney.
Oh, it must be Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel. Yeah, I mean, exactly. You can name all of the big hitters of the last few years, and they all kind of come back to Disney in many ways.
Yeah, and the budgets for these cinemas, for these films, are just growing and growing and growing and growing. So the need for payback on those films is that much greater, but there is such a huge demand by the population to go to these films.
I'd like to stick on this point of cinemas, if you will, because there was a really fascinating, I mean, the whole report is fascinating, but in the cinema section, I mean, you mentioned how cinema admissions, the amount of times people are going to the cinema, has kind of stayed flat over the last, up until about 2000, so that's 18 years, and everyone's going to the cinema around 2.7, 2.6 times per year on average, and yet the gross box office takings from the cinema chain just keeps going up. I mean, is that the sweets that we're buying? We're buying more popcorn? What's going on here?
Well, I think there's two interesting points to draw out there. The first is that cinema admissions have held steady despite the introduction of Netflix and Amazon and all the other alleged structural threats to the cinema sector just haven't washed through. People still want to go and have that screen time in a multiplex or the more boutique cinema schemes. And that feeds into your second point, which was that it's an experience and people want to maximise that experience. So we'll buy the drinks and the food. If there's any other merchandise there. So it's been a real success story of the leisure sector that the cinemas have been able to fend off these online at-home viewings. Yeah. And you can make the same comment about the restaurant sector with Deliveroo. And I remember when I first started my role 3-4 years ago, I would quite happily say, well, you can't eat out on the internet. Well, of course, now you can. But so I was wrong. but restaurateurs, or the best restaurateurs, have really risen to that challenge and have embraced people like Deliveroo and Uber Eats, and it's now a vital component of their business strategy. So it's a really nice story, success story for the sector, that the tenants and the operator base are so adept at evolving to these structural challenges.
I mean, that requires a lot of flexibility in their business. I mean, Five Guys, one of the fast kind of casual restaurants that you talked to for this report, mentioned that Deliveroo has added 11% to takings. Are you seeing that feeding through other restaurants and their cash flows?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I mean, it works for some restaurants than others. If you speak to, we spoke to Nando's, and they said actually some elements of their menu don't travel well, so it's much better on being delivered to the table. You won't get the same experience by having it delivered to home.
So chips,
chips was a prime example that they don't travel well. They'll end up being soggy by the time you get home, and that if for a business to remain consistent in their offering, it's really important that those elements are kept as a high quality.
But if you think about what that means for leisure property and what that means for the future of property, assuming that people are going to continue to use delivery services such as Deliveroo or Uber Eats, we are now seeing restaurateurs factor that into the configuration and specification of their restaurant units. So they will have somewhere for drivers to sit. So you haven't got somebody head-to-toe leather breathing over you while you're trying to have an intimate meal. And equally, there'll be space in the kitchen to sort of push out the orders quickly. So it's just the best-in-class operators are really those that can spot the challenges and work with them.
We're kind of talking about two different things, where you have the fast to go, where leisure comes to you, and the leisure where you go to, the out of town that we're talking about. Is location everything for those out of town?
A really big thing that we look at as owners of leisure is, especially when we're looking at new schemes to potentially purchase, is car parking is so important, and free car parking is even more important. So it's almost one of the top criteria for us when we're considering new schemes. And that is because a customer wants to come to a park, be able to park up for free and not have the hurry to get back to the car.
And certainly if they're going to the cinema and the restaurant and anything else, they don't want to keep looking at their watch to say, need to go and put more money on the meter.
Exactly. So it's very important.
We, as part of the research, we spoke to 10 of our tenants within the funds that Louis manages. And one of the themes that came out very clearly is that tenants want to be located in hubs or destinations. So in terms of what that means for location, it's having adjacencies that work. So having the right combination of restaurants and your anchor tenants, having really great placemaking. So it's not just this very brutalist concrete environment. It's been softened with appropriate flora and fauna. It might have some ancillary retail, and then really stretching out into the future, it might have things like electric vehicle charging points or click and collect facilities. So it's taking that space and making the most of it, and sort of flexible and future-proofed, and just beyond what we mean for leisure.
So before I move on to the more emerging leisure areas, I'd quite like to focus on one of the last kind of big traditional ones, which is gyms. I mean, over the last 5 years ago, about 6-7 million UK households had a private gym membership. Now, according to this research, 10-11 million have one. And we've seen a vast explosion in the kind of pay-as-you-go gym providers, such as Pure Gym, Virgin Active, a lot of those ones. Can you talk to us more about how they've fit into the leisure property story?
Well, I think it's more of a common sense piece, actually. If you think about the traditional gym memberships were often seen as quite costly. You were committed to too long a period of time, and operators out there saw that opportunity and thought, does it have to be such a long-term model? And so that's what started this explosion of these pay-as-you-go offers, like the Gym Group and Pure Gym, as you mentioned. And that's really seen a huge take-up, and not to mention that there's this wider piece on health and education and being...
Living your best life.
Yes, exactly.
Lifestyle.
And paying for it.
Yes. So I think that's been the crux of why the gym market's really exploded as much as it has.
Yeah. One of the quirks about the gym market that's been quite interesting is how many of the pay-as-you-go operators are international. So F45 is Australian, Barry's Bootcamp and some of the other sort of circuit-based ones are American. And they've obviously seen the sort of lazy attitude, which is quite a nice pun for leisure, isn't it, of some of the gym operators here, and seen an opportunity to really innovate in that space, and they've been wildly successful, so well done them.
So those are the more traditional areas. I mean, we're talking again within these kind of out of town parks area. You have these big box, I think called D2 is the technical technical term.
That's a use class, yeah.
And you have kind of traditional ones such as bowling, casinos, and the more emerging ones like urban golf and trampolining and those things. How is one taking market share away from the other? What's happening here?
I think there's a general theme. People and want to bring this phrase in. Competitive socialising is a new trend at the moment. People don't necessarily just want to go to space and meet up with people. They want to be active in a competitive environment, and having these new operations like the indoor golf and trampolining, it allows meeting up with friends but also on a competitive level, and that's everyone's really jumping on board that, pardon the pun.
So the after work drink has kind of become the after work drink escape room.
Yes, exactly. So these businesses are really getting on board with this huge desire for new concepts, and people wanting to try new things each week. And you know, we're seeing axe throwing companies coming out of the woodwork. We're seeing a real explosion of different variations on indoor golf. The trampolining markets had a really good run and an explosion throughout the whole country. So we're just waiting for the next kind of experience to come out of the industry.
But alongside that, the more traditional leisure activities, such as your bowling, such as your bingo, they are trading phenomenally well. So Hollywood Bowl Group has had, I think, one of its best years. And that's a really great case study in how a very traditional-based operator has innovated and make sure that they've diversified their income streams by offering the bowling, but also arcades and lots of retail. And they've got a really strong food and beverage offer. So they haven't just stood still. And so for this reason, we're not seeing the new entrants coming into the market taking market share in aggregate. It's a sector that's organically growing.
So it feels like it's kind of everyone's, as people have gained more in the way of disposable income, they're both experiencing more of the emerging big box and the traditional big box. And it's just everyone's kind of doing well out of this space, so long as they're well positioned to take advantage of the broader trend and the new technologies. Would you say that's correct?
Location is definitely one part of the toolkit to being a successful leisure operator. I think it's also very important that you're able to connect with your consumers and just be mindful of your ambitions. So there's many names out there on the high street that we probably can't talk about, but have expanded too rapidly and are now paying the price literally and metaphorically. So it's not an easy win. It's not a slam dunk. You still need to be sensible and cautious and have a good business strategy.
Yeah. And I think importantly is the refurbishment of these units and keeping up to date and providing fresh offers. So whilst the business might be performing well, it's very easy to just forget about it and take the money coming in. But actually, it's so important to the customer to come in and believe that there's investment being put into updating all technology on, and that covers all restaurants, bowling, indoor golf, cinemas. Mm. It's really, really key for these operators to keep doing that.
That takes me onto an interesting area where I think we've talked a lot about the leisure consumer and the leisure operator, but can we talk about the leisure owner in terms of, and kind of, I mean, us as a real assets team? What role do we have? Can we talk a little bit more about, say, rents in this space?
Yeah, and particularly if the hot topic on restaurants at the moment, really, on this wall of costs that we talk about being the rates increases. Brexit has had something to say for itself with impacts on exchange rate. We've included within this wall of costs is also things like wages and various other elements. But one thing which is quite paramount is rent as well. And we as owners are very aware of the pressures that rents can have on our operators. So particularly on the fund that I work on, we are very, with our key relationships with our operators, it's about understanding their businesses, mm-hmm. making sure that if they're coming into a unit of ours, that we feel comfortable and they feel comfortable that the rent which they're paying is sustainable in their business. And because it's, again, go back to common sense point of view, if they're paying too much rent and can't afford to be in the premises, they're not likely to be there for the long term. And as leisure owners, we want our tenants to be there for the long term.
And I think this is an illustration of a wider change that's happening in the property market, commercial or otherwise, about how we're moving away from the very adversarial landlord-tenant relationship mm-hmm. to one that's much more based on partnerships and transparency. And so if our restaurant operators feel comfortable sharing their turnover and their revenue with us, then we can start to set rent that's appropriate for the money that's washing through their tills. Mm. And it's a balance of both sides rather than it just being the days of old when it was the landlords saying you pay this or you will leave. And I think that's really an important change, and it's the restaurant sector is one where it's playing out really nicely.
I think you mentioned a level of trust between here. I'd quite like to talk how that level of trust acts within the community. I mean, we're talking a lot about kind of very regional locations. And as you mentioned before, that a lot of the cinemas, the restaurant chains are quite concentrated and very competitive, kind of very national chains. How important is it you as owners to really understand and embrace localism in your assets?
Well, actually, that's really, I'm glad you've brought that up, because we are very focused on trying to engage with more regional operators to come into where there's new space coming up on our schemes. It's really exciting to get behind these regional operators, I think.
Can you give us any examples?
Well, so more so in the restaurant sector, mm-hmm. I think it's probably easier to choose that sector. So we have a scheme up in Sheffield, and we unfortunately had a couple of casualties in terms of operators in there. But because of the strength of that scheme, we were able to ignite some interest from some local operators, and actually a particular operator called Prove Pizza, mm-hmm. who the owner I met, he's a local lad, mm-hmm. and has been desperate to get onto that scheme because he really believes in that scheme. He has a few operations around the country already, and he has such a strong social media following, and that's really, really key to these regional operators, is getting the backing from the customers. People are prepared to travel to go to that restaurant because they believe in that offer and want to see it succeed.
There's another really nice example also of a regional operator that's done so well that they've sort of now moved down to London, and that's Junkyard Golf, who started off in Manchester, and I think we're one of the first of the new style sort of indoor golf schemes and traded so well that they're... Do we have them in our scheme?
We are about to complete a lease with them at the Light in Leeds.
That sounds set up, but I genuinely didn't know that. But it's a really nice example of how it's not just a London story.
Yeah.
And there's so many innovative operators out there in the regions that are trading so well and that are able to connect with their customers and really innovate that they're now sort of travelling across the country.
So I think to wrap this up, I mean, what are the future emerging leisure trends that we're seeing? Are we seeing, I mean, off the top of my head, I think there you have the kind of laboratory section of your report kind of at the end with the kind of the brand new ideas with, I don't know, cinemas investing in new technology for, you know, taking IMAX further, sensory experiences. What can you talk to us a little bit more about what you're seeing maybe more 5, 10 years down the line?
I think we're going to see a blurring of the lines between the different ways in which we spend our time, whether that's leisure or retail or education. So thinking about the cinema sector, they're huge, great big spaces that are very busy in the evenings and the weekends, but not so much in the day. So I think the cinema operators will start to try and use that daytime hours a bit more strategically.
Some of them advertise for meeting spaces.
Yeah, so one of the cinemas in Leicester Square, they host, I think, either the Starbucks or the Pret's annual meeting, because there's a lots of seats and it's big space, so why wouldn't you? And also there's now some educational companies that are hosting training sessions in cinemas because the space functions so well for groups. I personally would like to see more of the community element built into schemes from day one, particularly around sort of some of the older demographics and just trying to make them more age aware spaces, not just these are for our millennials, but that's happening now.
I certainly think that another buzzword, this virtual reality world, is at the moment it's quite there aren't many opportunities. Well, it's quite, but the cost of entry is so high, and the technology is still relatively in its infancy. But I really see that developing quite exponentially, and we are already starting to see a few operators who are coming into that market and are providing these virtual rooms for esports and things like that. But I really do see that being a big part of the future leisure model.
So I guess the conclusion that I'm kind of taking from both is really about creating a destination, continuing to create a destination. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, a winner to us would be a hub location.
Yeah, and it's flexible and it provides opportunities for new blood to come in and create an ever-changing model that customers will want to come and visit again and again.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Louis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ellie. And to read more about the future of leisure, the Real Assets team have published a blog on the Future World blog called The Future of Leisure. And that also links to their longer report where you can find all of these fantastic stats, stories and predictions for the future. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to our wonderful production team and our producer, Holly McNulty. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And
thank you.
Goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.